Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
Today we're going to talk about, it's funny, an episode that we've talked about quite a bit, but it seems to be very, very, very popular. We put out a poll on our podcast Twitter feed at XFD Podcast. And I actually stuck this episode in there thinking, this is a great way to get one of those other ones picked. Because nobody is going to pick this. And everybody picked this episode, plus one, season 11. We know our audience, Jen.
Yeah, obviously.
They want to talk about, and then they had sex twice. I know that's what they want us to talk about. It's actually really funny because I was just thinking, I'm like, the last time, other than like our lists, which I know plus one makes our lists in many regards, just because we both think it's a great episode. The last time I actually talked about this episode in detail would have been when I did the podcast with Charlie and Nick, which meant I actually probably didn't get to squee properly.
I was curtailing my squeeing.
Like, yes.
We can squee freely.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to that. So, I mean, if you're listening to us and you're not into that, I don't know why you're listening to us. But if you are listening to us and you're into that, you're in for a ride tonight, folks.
Get into it.
No pun intended. Maybe a pun intended.
That's just going to be the first of many, folks. The first of many double entendres tonight.
Oh my God, I have a lot of things to say. But before we get into that, we would like to read some listener feedback.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay, so tweets for this week. These were mostly in response to our Darren Morgan episode. That was our most recent episode prior to this one. And we got some great feedback, as we always do on Twitter, some great comments, some great insights. One from KCX at bat.
Casey at the bat, right?
That's like Casey at the bat, isn't it? I was like, that means something, but I'm not quite grasping it. But that's what it is. It's maybe. Casey at the bat. I like that. She says, he says, I feel like it's a she, but I'm not totally sure about that. They say, listening to your podcast reminds me that the fandom always helped me appreciate episodes or scenes that I may not initially think are great. The goofiness of Darren's episodes grows on me the more I hear others' appreciation of it. Thank you, Casey at the bat. That is so great. I'm so happy to hear that because that's what I would most love to achieve with our podcast, is to sort of grow the appreciation of the X-Files. And that's one of the wonderful things about the online X-Files community, is that we can kind of enhance each other's enjoyment as we sort of see things that maybe others missed and others see things that maybe we missed. So thanks for that.
And Darren's episodes are not necessarily for everyone. So it's actually kind of cool when people can kind of come around. So that's great.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes a while for them to grow on you. Sometimes it's kind of like, what the fuck, the first time you watch it. So yeah, definitely can took a couple of go-arounds for me for a couple of them. So yeah, absolutely. The humor episodes in general can sometimes be something that you need to come around on a little bit, and they age really well, in my opinion. So great. Thank you. Kathy G says, and so I'm going to give Kathy a shout out here. She tweeted us and said, because I mentioned this theory that I'd read on Twitter and I couldn't remember where I'd read it. So Kathy thankfully spoke up and said, pretty sure Jen first heard about the Gupo colorblind theory from me. It's the first thing I thought of, and I tweeted about it. So thank you, Kathy. I'm so glad that I'm able to give you credit for that theory, because I love it. I love it. And because it's Darren Morgan, this idea that he couldn't tell the difference between the lime and the red Gupo was because he was red-green colorblind, and so Scully was going to have to taste it first. I think that's entirely possible that Darren Morgan would have done that. So, and I never would have thought about that. So hooray for X-Files Twitters and smart folks for putting this kind of good stuff out. So thanks, Kathy. And from Karen at Rain Night. Hi, Karen. Karen comes to the table and brings us the script from Josie Chung's From Outer Space, and helps to clear up a little bit of a subject that Annie and I discussed with regard to that episode, we were discussing the very end where Mulder is in bed, and are we meant to think that Mulder is, let's say, enjoying himself in bed? What was really going on there? So Karen, who has put together a lovely collection of X-Files scripts and very generously shares her insights from them on Twitter from time to time, quotes us from what it said in the original script for Jose Chung, where it says, "With the lights off, Mulder lies in bed, his right hand concealed somewhere under the covers, while his exposed left hand fiddles with a video remote."
Yeah, I think it's still pretty vague.
I don't know, but the fact that they're specifically mentioning his right hand concealed somewhere under the covers, mm-hmm. it's definitely at least meant you could interpret it that way if you so choose.
I absolutely agree with you 100%, but I love how it's kept intentionally vague, as all things are on this show.
Absolutely. It's not saying for sure that that's what he's doing, but it sounds to me like from the direction that they definitely meant us to make that assumption if we were so inclined.
I am sticking to my interpretation, and I will happily remain in my camp of that's Fair Jose enough. Chung's interpretation of what Mulder does with his writing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. I mean, I think that he was enjoying himself.
Yeah,
but I don't think we're meant to take it as canon. I think we're just meant to take it as, his perspective on Mulder, which you can kind of see where he's coming from there.
Totally.
I'm just going to run very quickly through a bunch of tweets from folks that responded very generously to a comment that I made on, I think it must have been our last podcast, where I said how much I love hearing what people are doing while they're listening to the podcast. And so a couple of folks shared a little bit about what they were doing while listening to the podcast, which I truly, truly enjoyed and valued very much. So thank you for that. Valerie, who is at Kyor Kuninchi. I really butchered that.
Kyor Yokusenchi.
Thank you. Valerie says, I listened to the podcast at work. It helped me focus, LOL. So I'm not sure if it does help her focus, but I love the idea of, hey, listening to the podcast at work, if that helps you to get through the workday, that is great. I love listening to podcasts at work when I can, because it definitely helps the time to go by. Monica, who is at Monica Filefan. Hi, Monica. She's being very, very, very disciplined this week. She says, I listened to about 12 minutes of this and forced myself to stop so I can save it for my long drive to Florida coming up. So thank you, Monica. I hope that that if you've had the drive that you enjoyed it, or that if it's yet to come that you do enjoy it. And I tweeted to Monica in response to that, saying, I've only been to Florida once, and that was for Spooky Empire in Orlando last fall. And I have such fond memories of that event. So I'm really happy to hear that a tiny piece of me is going back to Florida. So that made me feel really happy. And Casey at the bat again, coming through for us. She sent me a picture of this gorgeous sort of desert highway that she's driving down. It looks like it's the Southwest U.S. It looks like it could have been like from the episode Within or something like that.
Dreamland.
It's got this classic, it's got this classic sort of desert look to it. I love it. And she says, this pic is for Jen, who wants to know what we're doing when we listen. Thanks. Thanks for keeping me entertained out in the middle of nowhere. So thank you, Casey.
You're welcome.
You are more than welcome. And a similar driving story from Karen at Rain Night. Karen tells us, I just want to thank you for somehow making this podcast the exact length of my nightmare drive to this convention this afternoon. I owe you my sanity. Well, thank you, Karen. Happy to contribute to sanity any way that I can. I'm glad that the podcast was the right length, because sometimes we're not sure exactly how long to make these things. So I'm glad it worked out well for you.
Can I just point out that I know Karen, she's a friend of mine, and I owe her my sanity a lot of the time. So thank you, Karen.
Yeah, thank you, Karen. Karen is awesome. From Bob 79519, whose Twitter handle is something like at Wilhelm's Scream.
Okay, wait. No. Do you know what the Wilhelm Scream is?
No, I don't. Is that?
A little bit of trivia. That's the scream that they play in movies that is like the same scream. Like it's a kind of a, it's a canned screen sound effect that they play in lots of movies. I don't know where the origin of it is, but it's called the Wilhelm scream. I'm pretty sure that's what his handle's referring to. Anyway, continue.
I'm sure that it is. Thank you. I'm learning something from you and from Bob. So that's a new one on me. I am learning. Thanks, guys. And so Bob comments, these podcasts make my leaflet distribution more tolerable. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Glad to help with the distribution of your leaflets. And Sarah, whose handle is Sarah de Vicomte, listened to it while showering, so I had to start it over because I did not hear a thing. I know, right? It's hard to listen to things in the shower.
I
tried
works.
Many times. Yeah. Then did the dishes and went grocery shopping. So I walked, but by then the earphones were not working, so I haven't finished listening to it yet. I hope you did get a chance to finish listening to it, Sarah, but I just feel good knowing that I was with you as you went about your day, and it sounds like you really got quite a lot accomplished, frankly, more than I probably did that day.
So, I appreciate the detailed nature of that tweet.
I really liked it. It makes me feel like vicariously productive if people are doing productive things while listening to our podcast. So glad to hear it. I'm glad that I'm contributing to other people's productivity, even if I'm somewhat lacking occasionally in my own. So thanks, guys. I love this stuff. So anytime you want to tell me what you're doing, I love hearing about it. Makes me feel like I'm just like out there in many interesting parts of the world and interesting people's lives. So thank you for that.
Tweeted us, guys, at XFV, I can't talk, at XFD Podcast. Let us know what you do when you listen to the podcast, or, you know, give us your interesting, you know, trivia. We like your handles, the Wilhelm Scream. That's pretty cool. Thanks, guys.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
Anyway, so Plus One, directed by Kevin Hooks, who I think did fantastic, and written by Chris Carter.
Chris Carter.
I mean, you know, and I know we're going to get to this, and I think there are a lot of people that have issues with the writing in this episode. I would say one or two scenes in particular. But as usual, I don't really. But Jen, what do you have to say about the writing of this episode?
I don't either, for once. So I'm not going to be the one that's going to be like, yeah, but no. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I love the writing. I think this is Chris Carter writes really dandy episodes a lot of the time. And he's written some of my favorites. And I think he did a really, very solid job on the writing here. I was a little surprised he didn't direct it himself, actually. For some reason, I assumed he had until I double checked today. And but no, he called upon Mr. Kevin Hooks, who has never directed anything before or since for The X-Files.
Yeah.
But as you said, did a very dandy job. And I think the writing's terrific in this episode. I think it's quite interesting. It's quite well thought out. I think Chris Carter, honestly, in my opinion, is a better writer when he's doing these kind of standalone episodes than when he's doing the sort of mythology episodes. I mean, this aired two episodes after My Struggle 3. And for me, it's hard to believe that the same writer wrote both of those episodes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because this is so much better. Just the writing is so much better. Everything about it is so much better. The characterization is so much better.
Yeah.
It was like a breath of fresh air 2 weeks gone after My Struggle 3. Because right after My Struggle 3, we had this the following week, which was like, okay, there's hope for this season yet. Mm-hmm. And then we had Plus One the week after that. And for me, I was like, okay, the ship has been righted. Yeah. Pun intended.
Yes.
Ship has been righted. And the disaster that was My Struggle 3 was perhaps the low point of the season, and that actually the rest of the season is going to be good, which is exactly what turned out to happen. And this really solidified that.
I would agree with that. I think you're right when you pointed out that I think he does better with his Monster of the Weeks. I feel like when he writes mythology episodes, they can be a bit overwrought.
Yes,
just a little over the top. Sometimes it can be a little cheesy. And for the record, I'm perfectly well aware and understand the reasons that people have issues with some of the dialogue in this episode. But we're going to dig into that. And I'm just saying, if you think this is just going to be a love fest, don't tune out, because I mean, I'm going to talk about the arguments that are made, even though I don't agree with them. I'm going to address them. Because I do feel like this episode captures Mulder and Scully very well. And it's interesting just to see the divide. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah. I totally get the divide, because a lot of the divide, and we'll get into this, a lot of the divide, the people, it represents me at two different points in time. At one point in time, I kind of had one take on a lot of the writing and didn't care for it. And then I kind of changed my opinion as time went on. So I totally get the different arguments about it, because that's been me on more than one occasion.
I think I've mentioned this before, but this episode sort of was a huge turning point for me in the way that I viewed MSR and the way that I viewed these two characters. It really made me think that things were much more complicated than I A, thought they were, and B, wanted them to be. And that's kind of what I love about it, because I think it really makes them feel more rounded, a little like more real people. Like we're not just focusing on this. Okay, this is like a romantic story where we got to wait for the inevitable point where they get together. Like that's not how they roll. You know, that's not how they do this show. This is something that I've kind of always have known about them. But I guess we keep talking about it. We'll get into this conversation a little bit later. But do you want to kind of just go through it a little bit? I mean, I don't really have an outline to talk about, but what was your first impression overall? You know, besides the obvious, they had sex, we're going to scream and be great. But like, what was your first impression of the episode, the overall episode?
I liked it a lot. Like I mentioned, it was like, especially given what we'd been given in season 11 so far, we'd had one, to my eyes, terrible episode, and then one, to my eyes, brilliant episode, and this was going to be like the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Like, which way is the season going to go?
Yeah.
And I was very, very happy with which way the season went. I thought it was, it wasn't too weird or off of the usual kind of X-Files pattern. It was a good, solid X-Files episode with some really interesting things thrown into it. And I loved it and thought it was a lot of fun. It's a pretty fun episode, but it's also a pretty scary episode. Like,
oh yeah,
those doppelgangers, they scared the shit out of me. They still do. Those scenes are scary. And so it just, you know, did everything that X-Files does well. It was scary. It was interesting. It had some great Mulder Scully banter and some great Mulder Scully sexiness. So to me, it was like it ticked all the boxes for an X-File.
Yeah, totally. Same here. I remember I remember being really impressed by the X-File itself. Just the plot, the story. It was really engaging.
Yeah.
Like I had kind of been spoiled. I mean, you know, full disclosure, as a shipper, like I'd been a little bit spoiled on the idea that the sex was going to happen. And I just remember being terrified the entire time that it was going to end up being like doppelgangers. Like it wasn't really them. You know how they always like to do that shit. And I was just so grateful that it wasn't, that I remember thinking, oh my God, how is this happening? Like this episode to me literally felt like mana from heaven. Like it seriously did. I'm like, I'm not talking about just that scene. I know everyone's like, get off the scene. Nobody is saying get off that scene. That's the only scene we want to talk about.
No,
but the entire thing was so good. I just remember thinking, what a cool X-File. What kind of unique, like the imagery was so good. The direction was great. The music was so good. Like the entire season, I feel like Mark Snow killed it. Like it was just
totally,
especially the scene where like, you know, where Mulder kind of sees his doppelganger in the mirror. And there's just like kind of this creepy, like when the guy, the lawyer is like throwing all of the weapons out.
Yeah.
It's really intense. Really well paced. Yeah.
Yep.
And they make you wait for it. Like they make you wait for it. The bed scene, like they fake you out like, twice, which I kind of love.
I kind of love that. I don't mind being faked out if it pays off in the end.
Exactly. I kept thinking, oh God, please don't let that be like a cut scene. Please don't let that. Like, I just remember being so terrified. And I feel like, so the first time I watched it, I remember being over the moon just because of the last scene. But I also remember being a little, I would say, confused, a little thrown off by the conversation that they had in the bed. And then when I watched it again, like multiple times, it started to make a lot more sense to me and you know, get under my skin, so to speak. It was really good. I thought it was, I was same as you. I was like, we're in for a good season. I'm excited about this. It's so much better than last season. It did feel like we're getting back to the bread and butter, as Mulder said.
Yeah.
So I just loved that. And, like, you know, I have to mention too, they both look fine.
Fine.
I can't even think of a proper adjective to describe how hot they both are in this episode.
Seriously. I mean, no wonder they couldn't keep their eyes / hands off each other, because they both look amazing. I mean, I'll take Mulder in that gray tank top all day long.
Oh, my Lord. And yeah, and Scully in those cute little fitted suits with the little pumps. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, we had so many seasons of her wearing these sad kind of ill-fitting suits. It's just so nice to see them putting her in something that fits. I love it.
Yeah, she looks amazing in it, and looks great in her, were they like navy blue jammies? Very hot, yes. In my opinion.
Yes.
She looks amazing in that whole episode, and she's got the great long hair.
Oh, R.I.P. the wig.
In the season.
I love that wig.
Yeah. So, yeah, they both look amazing. Like, the lighting must have just been, like, really, like, bang on, because they look great in every scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ugh, so good.
As they do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I know people want us to get to the scene in the bed. I know we're going to get there. But I know you love to mention, and we've mentioned a million times before, how great Karen Konovol's performance
can never
was.
Can never say enough how awesome she is.
Yeah.
I'll say it at any opportunity. I love her.
Yeah.
Love her performance. She's just such a really gracious person, too. I just think she's an amazing, because she's brilliantly talented, but also very humble and a lovely person from what I can see.
Yeah.
And I wrote down, she is a force of nature in this episode, which she is. I don't know what this episode would have been without her. I did not realize upon first watch that she was actually playing the role of Chucky as well as the role of
Judy.
Yeah,
me neither. A lot of people didn't.
A lot of people didn't, which says a lot right there. I mean, even watching it now, knowing it, it's still hard to see it, because she just is so, not only did they do an amazing job with the makeup and everything, but she just completely just inhabits that character. And it really does seem like a different person.
I mean, when you're playing four roles.
Four roles.
All of them super convincing. I mean, it's kind of a crime she wasn't nominated for an Emmy, I have to say.
Yeah, she should have won everything for this, because she was, talk about like the heavy lifting. She did some amazing work in this in this episode. And I can only imagine that Chris Carter must have been thinking about her when he wrote this, because I can't imagine who else could have played this.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Karen has played many an awesome role on the X-Files throughout history, going back to Clive Bruckman's Final Repose, which is a very short role as the fortune teller, and of course, Mom in Home.
Yeah.
So we know we can count on her, and she knocks it out of the park, of course. She's
Wait. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, no, we can't proceed until we get that.
Cannot proceed.
There.
Okay. Continue.
It was kind of lingering in my throat too, so thank you. I feel better now already.
Yeah.
You can tell she took great care with the role, made a huge effort with it, really paid attention to the details to try to make it work as best as she could. And she does an amazing job, and I love her, and she makes the episode. The episode would not exist without her, in my opinion. I don't know how they would have pulled it off with someone else. So I give her all my love and all of my respect, because I think she's amazing. She still shows up on TV on a pretty regular basis, and often mentions her appearances on her Twitter feed. And I try to catch her whenever I can, because she's amazing in every single thing she does. And I'm glad to see that she is still getting roles, because she deserves them all.
Yeah. No. She did totally great. You've said everything I need to say. Like, it was awesome. But I did want to say, I actually noticed something for the first time when I was watching the episode last night, which is kind of crazy considering how many times I've seen this thing. Did you notice, maybe I'm stupid, I hadn't noticed this. Did you notice in the room when they're playing the Hangman game that the Parent Trap is on the TV?
I did not notice
Oh,
that.
Oh, my God. I freaked out. It's like
How did I not notice that?
I'm pretty sure that that's what it was. It was a black and white TV, but it looked like the two Haley Mills parents.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did I not notice that before? Like, that's perfect and crazy.
That's perfect. The Parent Trap, of course.
Yes. It just seemed like the kind of movie that, like, she would be watching, and it happened to have, like, you know, quote unquote doppelgangers. I just thought it was so perfect.
Yeah, that and is perfect. It, I
and
love it.
It's the idea of like they're trying to get these parents back together. Like, look at all this awesome symbolism. I don't know. I just thought it was
Isn't
really
that
cool.
Great. I love it. And this kind of stuff is never by accident. I mean, Chris Carter always pays very careful attention to what's on in the background in his episodes. So for sure that was chosen with care.
I have to actually throw this out in case anyone out there in internet land knows the answer to this question. In Ghoulie, when they go, and I'm going off topic, but when they go into the room, into Jackson's house and find the parents dead, there's a movie playing on the TV in that room. It's another black and white movie, and I don't know what it is. If you know what it is, let me know at XFD Podcast, because I really want to know. Like, anytime I see something like that playing in the background, I'm like, oh, that's got to have some sort of significance.
You
what are they
know
watching?
It has. You know, it will have a significance that will make us look at Ghoulie in a whole new way. Probably
they do this a lot. Like, I remember also in All Things, which I'm going to bring up later, they have the bit where Mulder's packing and he's got this old black and white movie playing in the background. And I don't know what the movie is, but it was very, very clear in the script, too, that the movie was going to say something about you're breaking my heart. And that's what the dialogue was saying. He was like, you're breaking my heart or something. And then he mutes it. And I was just like, oh, that's so perfect. And so like, oh, I don't know. I just love it. I love it. But anyway, if you know what movie's playing in Ghoulie, let us know. I know that's kind of off topic, but I just thought of it.
I want to know too.
Yeah. Let's get into some of this Mulder and Scully stuff. Cause you know, that's the real bread and butter here. Let's talk about the first conversation. I mean, do you have anything to say about the scene in the office at the beginning? I mean, other than that, it's just so adorable.
It's adorable. It's totally adorable. I love it. It's such a classic structure of starting off the episode in the office, which not a lot of episodes did in the revival. So
no.
I was really happy that they did. It was definitely, as Mulder himself said, getting back to the bread and butter. And it's just very cutely written and very beautifully acted. And they're just like, everything is already clicking. And it just kept on like that for the whole rest of the episode.
I can't say enough about David Duchovny in season 11. Like, I really can't. Like, I think, and like, again, like season 11 Mulder, everyone knows, is the Mulder of all of our dreams. But like, right off the top, just the way he's behaving is just, it's just this new sort of older maturity and it's coming across in his acting, but he still is keeping the character. Like, I just think he did such a great job. And even in this scene in the beginning when they're talking, like, he has this sort of reserve, this restraint that you don't typically see with Mulder, that I really enjoy that. I really enjoy that.
I very much enjoy that as well. And I also really enjoy, there's just a little undercurrent of playfulness there as well, as there always is with Mulder. But it's just, he plays it so beautifully in that scene. Like, when it's just like tiny little things, like he's talking about who were the witnesses to the various deaths and, you know, friends, family, a doctor. And the way he says, a doctor, it's so cute. Doctor, like, you know, he's making a cute little point. Like, even you must be convinced by this. And it was just very, like, a very cute little twist that he put on those words just to add a little sort of fun bit to the scene.
It's just so nice to see, like, okay, they can, I mean, I know they already had season 10 to do it, but I mean, they also, their characters were in a different place. And I mean, when we're watching them now post this, it's like, this was probably the main reason that I was just kind of in love with this episode, because I'm like, this feels like what it used to feel like. They're on the same page. They're friendly again. There's no weirdness. I mean, yeah, they're not back together yet, technically, but like, at least it's like they're together doing their thing. Like, and that's all I really want from this show. So
It's such a change from season 10, right? Thank goodness we got into that kind of dynamic right in the beginning of season 11. Well, really with episode 2.
Totally.
That, that at least they're that same dynamic again, that positive dynamic, you know, they're friends, they've got that chemistry happening. And what a refreshing change from season 10.
Yeah. So we didn't talk about this too much, but the actor who plays Archie Seaver, I thought he did a really good job too.
Very, very good. Very good. Very, like, I really bought him as Scared for sure.
Oh, God,
I was terrified along with him.
Yeah. This, I'm trying to look up the name of this actor. I'm not very prepared. I apologize.
I'm going to give a shout out to the makeup people while you do that. Yes! Because when he's in that scene where he's first interviewed, or the only time he's interviewed by Mulder and Scully, as it turns out, when he's just coming off of his car accident, man, does he ever look beat up. Like, that is very legit looking makeup.
Freaky.
He looks like really in rough shape. It's like almost like too much to look at. It's so realistic. So
Jared Ager Foster is his name.
All right. Well done, Jared Ager Foster. Yeah,
he did
because,
a great
job. Solid. So very solid. I think all of the acting is great. I love the two nurses, for example, in the psychiatric hospital.
Yes.
They're just it's just a very small role. They only get a handful of lines, but they're so delightful every time. They're like, we are not going in there. They're fun. They've just got this cute chemistry together, and I love them. I love the two nameless nurses.
And you know, I like too that like Scully's sort of attitude towards them or reaction wasn't like, oh God, these people are useless. It was kind of more like, oh, that I've been there. I get it. All right. You know,
she was quite sort of like respectful to a certain extent that they know what they're talking about. Like, okay, fine. I respect your choice.
Yeah. And I mean, it was just very subtle. I mean, that's just Jillian being awesome. I mean, you don't need any lines to convey that. You just need Jillian to be awesome, which of course she is. Great performances. I mean, all the little supporting performances were great.
Yeah, which I tend to give a lot of credit to the director when that happens, when all of those little performances are so good. I mean, obviously the casting was solid to begin with, but the director has to kind of make all those things happen. So I tend to give kudos to Kevin Hooks for that.
Yeah, agreed. He did a great job. I thought everything about this, the direction was great. Let's talk about the episode in the motel room, the first scene. The scoot in your boot scene. Okay, so Jen, I think this scene is adorable. I think the number one thing, I mean, I like their banter. I love the dialogue, just the back and forth is so Mulder and Scully. It's so perfect. I think the thing that I remember reading or hearing that people just had an issue with was like, I know I'm going to get annoyed. I apologize. But it just like the mere idea that Scully could possibly have some sort of vulnerable feeling about getting old. Like it seemed to really offend people. I found it very believable and very human. What do you think? I don't know.
I find it very believable and human too. It took me aback a little bit when I first watched it, cause it's not necessarily something we expect from Scully, but then again, we haven't seen that much of 54-year-old Scully.
Right.
So we don't necessarily know what she is like in great detail. And it's not like she's whining about this nonstop for the whole episode or for the whole season.
No, like she was literally just told, like,
it's just like one little moment of insecurity after having had this sort of encounter with Demon Judy. And we're all entitled to moments of insecurity. What kind of a human being would Scully be if she didn't have that occasionally? She's not perfect.
Yeah,
she is subject to the same insecurities as the rest of us, even if it's only briefly, because it doesn't seem to be something that bothers her on an ongoing basis. But of course, you know, now and again, that kind of thing's going to pop into your mind. I'm a woman of 50. I understand it. And it's nice to see that addressed on TV, because the plight of the 50-something woman is not often discussed on television.
Right.
So I was thrilled to see it discussed at all.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, I can get the reaction of like, you know, seeing Gillian Anderson looking into the mirror at all the flaws she doesn't have, and then we have these conversation about getting old. But like, that's not her fault. It's not her fault. She's gorgeous. She's an older woman, and I mean, this is one of those things too. Is I don't think this would be out of the realm of extreme possibility if she and Mulder were actually together. I think the whole point is that they're not together, and I feel like that's kind of probably what is really really building on this insecurity that's happening. The idea of, I don't know, this sort of idea of your mortality and you're getting older and you're and she's alone again, you know what I mean? And it's I don't know, to me it just felt, it was brief, it was just a nice little icebreaker, a nice thing to kind of like let him know, hey, I'm thinking about this is and then and then it comes, when it comes up later in the bed scene, it just seems a little bit more like, hey, I really just want to have a discussion about what's going on here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah, totally, totally. It just, yeah, it seemed very organic to me and
yeah.
and very natural throughout the revival. The subject of Mulder and Scully's age comes up quite often.
Yes, and I love that. I love that
because, you know, middle-aged woman, I'm loving the middle-aged people on television.
Yes.
And so it's a theme really throughout seasons 10 and 11 mm-hmm. about, you know, they're not the same people they were. They are older now. What does that mean? What is their place in the world now? Mm-hmm. And so that makes total sense to me that it's not out of place to be discussing age by any means.
No.
And so makes total sense that it comes up. And, you know, and the way Scully even says it is very sort of like, she's very matter of fact about it. Like,
yeah.
you know, what does she say? Do you think of me as old? And it's like, she's very direct about it and very matter of fact. She's not whiny or
no.
needy or do you think of me as old? No,
yeah.
she's just like, do you think of me as old? Like, let's just get down to brass tacks here. Like, let's just have a real conversation. And it's like, you know, great, put it out there. And yeah, it's a very cute little conversation and love the back and forth. And
it's one of those things I was going to say when Judy brings it up, that it's probably not something, like you said before, that occurs to her often. Like, you know, she's got her shit yeah. together. She's awesome, you
yeah.
know? And so even though Judy's, you know, wrong about how Mulder sees her and how all of this stuff, like having somebody confront you with it, I think would make anybody wonder, especially knowing that, like I said before, they're not together.
Yeah.
And she also, I love the, in that scene with her and Judy, I love the scene when she's, or the part when she leaves and the Dookie hits the window and it's like, it's she's pegged her. Like, I love the
yeah.
symbolism of you missed her, and now you've pegged her. You know what I mean? Like, and
yeah.
I thought that was really, really cool. And then it cuts immediately
yes.
to her looking in the mirror. I just thought that was a really nice transition. I really liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, right after Judy says, truth hurts.
Yes.
And, yeah, and then boom.
Yeah.
Perfectly. Yeah, absolutely. Like, really hammers it home. So,
yeah,
it makes total sense. And it's not like, you know, she doesn't think she's ugly. She doesn't think she's fat. She just questions whether society and or especially Mulder views her as old, which I can tell you as a 50-year-old, it's a question I often ask, not because I'm like I'm less than because I'm old or older, but it's just a question of, okay, I'm 50 now, so what does this mean? Like, am I officially old now, or am I officially middle-aged? What does this actually mean? Because I'm not used to thinking of myself as a 50-year-old, and so am I old now? It's like you ask yourself that a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much from the time you hit 40, you start asking yourself that. And you're kind of wondering, you know, where do I fit in? And at what point will I be a senior citizen and things
yeah.
like that? So it's perfectly natural. Not necessarily as like you're knocking yourself, but just kind of like, am I old? Like, where am I exactly in your eyes, Mulder, and
yeah.
in the eyes of society? Like, where am I now? Maybe I'm not the young person that I think that I was, but, you know, I didn't really give it much thought until Judy brought it up, but I guess maybe I am. What do you think? So
yeah,
it's,
and
it's
I think
like
that,
a totally innocuous conversation.
Yeah, and I would agree. I would argue that it isn't, it's Mulder. I would argue that it's Mulder specific. I don't think
yes.
that she's questioning how society views her. I think that this is very Mulder specific. And I think that plays into the later conversation, because I think it's interesting that she does have this sort of fear that, like, hey, you're the dude. I know this is the way the world works. Is you're going to go on. You're going to find some younger chick, which I'm not even going to go into the real life lives of them because it depresses me. But I art imitating life. It's a little strange and a little kind of eerie. But it's a thing that happens. You know what I mean? It's like a real fear that you can have. Like, men, for some reason, get to grow old and stay young, and women don't get to do that, unfortunately, in our society. And it's just one of those things I just find is really kind of cool. Like you said, they brought it up, they made it happen, they went over it really quickly, and like he assured her so quickly. He didn't even have to. Mulder knows better, but he didn't even have to think about it. And the way that she looks at him after is just like, oh, this is all going to be fine. Like, I just remember seeing that look she gave him. And I was thinking, two are going to be fine, you know?
Totally. I mean, I love it. But she's just so cute when, like, you know, of course he says, You've still got some scoot in your boot. And I love it when she responds and says, I'm going to boot you out of here. And she's just like, it's all just very cute and adorable. And she's obviously not left feeling less than or worthless or anything. She's clearly quite happy by the end of that quite brief conversation.
I mean, if anything else, she's kicking him out because she's probably worried something's going to happen, which, you know,
I think she is.
Ends up bearing out later. But I think I wanted to bring this up because I feel like even from the moment that like they're like, working on the case and they're out on the road and like she's checking out his butt and you know it's not even subtle, like the amount of the like their looks in this episode are just obscene.
Yes,
you know, it's
honestly like I hadn't watched it in at least a few months and I had forgotten the degree of eye fucking in this episode. It is like
it's quite a degree.
Scully especially, like Scully is thirsty for it. You can see from the very beginning. She is definitely eyeing Mulder up the whole episode, and it's a delight to watch.
And he knows too, because it's like he's always coming into her room with like his shirts but unbuttoned. I'm like, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, that is not by accident.
No way is that by accident. It's just so funny. Yeah. I just love there's so many little subtle things in this episode that it's like, okay, did they plan each and every one of these things? I hope so. But if they didn't, they're nice, happy accidents.
Oh, they really are. I mean, like the pheromones are in the air. Oh, there's no question. The whole episode, I mean, it's a very, you know, sort of scary episode and a very sort of standard X-File, but there's just like an overlay of sex through the whole episode. Like, I mean, there always is on the X-Files, but more than usual. And so it's no surprise it ends up where it ends up.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about where it ends up, shall we?
Let's.
Well, before we get to that, let's talk about the conversation. The conversation. I'm going to let you start. I want to hear what you have to say about the conversation that they have after she says the iconic line, "Can you hold me?" Which I heard the collective screaming of shippers across the country and all of the countries.
Hell yeah.
This following conversation, what did you think about it?
The first time I watched it, I didn't care for it. I'll be honest about that. So I totally get it when people say they don't like it.
Yeah.
Because that was my first impression too. I wasn't listening super carefully, I'll admit that.
Well,
I was just wondering the whole time where it was going. And so I was just sort of picking up on the surface meaning, I think, of what they were saying. And so, you know, when they're talking about things like, you know, Scully saying maybe you'll meet someone and someone younger and you can have kids. And Mulder's like, maybe you will. You could do that. And she's like, I don't know who I'd have them with. And I'm like, what is even happening here right now? What are you two doing? I don't approve of this.
Yeah.
And so it kind of distressed me a little bit that they seem to be kind of like fobbing each other off, like, you know, that each other wasn't even an option. And I'm like, guys, what's happening here? And I was quite baffled by it. But then it just took a little while to sink in. Like you say, you just have to kind of watch it a few times. Mm-hmm. And once I calmed down and watched it the next day, several times like yourself, and once I just turned my perspective around a little bit and realized, oh, they're not saying what they mean. We're not supposed to necessarily take this as a factual gospel truth of how they're actually thinking. Their words do not reflect their thoughts necessarily, and which is very typical for Mulder and Scully.
Yes.
It's a very, like you say, it really says a lot about their characterization. And if you don't really think about it in a certain way, then you might be thrown by it and think these people don't seem to think much of each other. But in reality, it kind of dawned on me, this is actually quite a complex conversation and really quite sort of written in a very complex way. And what's really happening is that they're just throwing this kind of like stuff back and forth at each other, almost like trying to sort of bait each other in a way, I feel like.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of trying to like, they're talking around the issue. They're almost trying to provoke each other into saying something real, which is a dangerous game and not a successful one in this case. And so it winds up being all a bit weird, but neither of them seem to mind the weirdness. I mean, me as a viewer, I'm watching it saying, guys, what up? But they obviously understand each other's code better than I did at on first viewing, because they're both perfectly happy with how the conversation ends, even though it doesn't seem to have any kind of a genuine sort of conclusion to it, other than shoulder shrug, hope for the best. But, you know, they're Mulder and Scully. They get it about each other, and they know it's all about what's not being said.
Right.
And once I kind of understood that, and hey, they're happy with how it ended, clearly. So I'm going to be happy with it, too. So it's actually a really interesting insight into their conversation style, their communication style, and their characters, and how damn frustrating it can be sometimes for each other, I got to think, and certainly for us as the viewer, but very authentic and actually really quite well written.
Yeah, I actually agree with that that assessment, too. I think the main thing that I took away from this is Scully, like, making this point to press, like, I'm not going to let you get away with it. Like, I'm not going to let you get away with making a joke. Like, she literally says, that's not what I mean, twice.
Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah.
Which is not something that happens when they have conversations. Like, first of all, we rarely get conversations of them having about personal anything. Like, that rarely happens. Yeah. And in season 11 alone, we have three minute conversations of them talking about their relationship. Which we have never gotten. Like, they don't. That's just not a thing they do. And I'm not suggesting that these are two people that have had this relationship and that they never talk about their relationship. But there's definitely communication issues. I mean, they've talked about this for a long time. And we know this. I mean, anyone who knows Mulder and Scully should know this. That they don't necessarily talk about the things that they need to talk about. And I love the idea that she has to press him and that she does. It almost makes the whole... feeling old conversation, it gives it a little bit more weight, because it's like she's suddenly feeling this push to be like, you know, we need to talk about this. Like, I what's going on? You need to give me some sort of assurance that I'm not going to be left alone, you know? And I think they do that in their own way. Like, I, kind of like what you said, I mean, a lot of the people, and you know, this is fair critique. A lot of people will say, why is Mulder asking her if she can have kids? He knows she can't have kids. And I'm like, of course he knows she can't have kids. Like, why is, like, he's, you know, he's Mulder. He's going to say things that are, like, going to make her feel better. You know what I mean? Like, maybe there's hope. You know what I mean? Like, that's Mulder. So it's like, it never bothered me that he said that. She's kind of being rational, like she always does. That's not going to happen. I don't have anyone to have one with, even if I could. You know, like, she's fishing, like you said. Like,
yes.
It's so... It's kind of heartbreaking in a way, but it's so it's real, because sometimes when people don't know how to talk, this is how they talk. And I just love that about this scene. It doesn't play out the way you would picture it to play out. And I mean, I think that's the problem with a lot of people in general, sometimes with Mulder and Scully, is that these things don't play out the way that they do in other movies and other TV shows. It's just not the way that they do things. And I actually find that refreshing. I like it.
All very, very true. Like, yeah, just very real and, like, you know, like, kind of dysfunctional. And that's what Mulder and Scully are. I mean, they wouldn't have had the relationship they had if they were two functional people in a relationship. And so, it's season 11. They're still kind of dysfunctional, but, you know, they make it work for them as best they can. And I'm going to draw a correlation between this conversation and the one that they have in Nothing Lasts Forever, which I like to bring up at every possible opportunity. Final scene where they're talking about their relationship. And there's a lot of similarities there. And the one in Nothing Lasts Forever goes a bit farther in terms of resolving some things. I think that we even hear, like, the exact same lines where Scully says things like, that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
And in that case,
Mulder presses
a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And say, what do you mean? Like, spell it out for me. We've got to get past this obstacle. There's a really nice arc with those two episodes of, you know, they're starting to talk about it here, but not having a lot of success with it. But then by the time they get to the second last episode of the season, they're revisiting that kind of conversation and having it in a much more healthy, open, successful way. And it works really well. And I love that.
Our babies are growing up.
They really are.
Yeah, I love the scene. It seems like, and you know what else is interesting, which kind of, you know, sometimes one single line can kind of alter my entire perspective. Like the fact that he says to her, do you want to have more kids? It tells me that they've never talked about this. That tells me that they don't talk about this, which to me makes perfect sense. You have this sort of horrible thing that happened that you're not, what are you going to, you're not going to talk about it. Like, you're not going to talk about that. It's just going to kind of grow and grow and get worse and worse. And that's the thing that happens. That's the thing that happens when tragedy happens to people. And I mean, we know that they have no shortage of tragedy that's happened in their lives. The William thing is at the top of that list. So when I hear Mulder asking her, well, you want to have more kids? Like, look, it's 10 years too late to be talking about this, but let's talk about it now. You know what I mean? Like, that's heartbreaking. Yeah, like, but it tells me something about their relationship, like that their relationship fell apart for a reason. And I can see it in this dialogue. I think a lot of time people just get upset because they're not seeing what they want to see. But I feel like I feel like people don't give Chris Carter enough credit for knowing these characters. I think he knows these characters more than people think he does. I mean, he made them after all. So
He did. And yeah, I totally agree that if I was writing a fanfic, I probably wouldn't write it like this.
No.
Because, you know, I wouldn't want it to go like this, but it is what it is. It's Mulder and Scully. This is what they're like.
Yeah.
And knowing how things ended through the season and how things went through the season, I can take it a lot better now because I know things continue to sort of improve between them.
Yeah.
I think at the time I felt like it was a setback, but I kind of started to grasp that that wasn't a setback. It was, like you say, they're bringing up issues that they should have been bringing up years ago, but, you know, better late than never. I'm glad that at least they're trying now. It took them to this point to really be in a place where they could even start to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're even bringing it up, trying to talk about it, is that's a huge thing for them. It's not a super successful conversation, but that it's their first go at it.
Yeah.
And so better, it's about damn time. So,
and, you know,
I'm glad they did.
It ended in sex, so it can't be too terrible.
Yeah, it obviously didn't end too badly. They were pretty happy with how it ended, that's for sure.
You know what I wanted to point out? No, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
You go.
I was just going to say my favorite line in that conversation is it's a little bit it's kind of stands out from the rest of the conversation to me, but I just love it in and of itself. When Scully says, "Sometimes I think the world is going to hell and we're the only two people who can save it." Because for me, that is the X-Files. That is exactly what the X-Files has always been about for me, is the world is going to hell and Mulder and Scully are the only two people that can save it, and they're going to save it together. And I love that line, and I know that they used that line in a promo at one point, or sort of before the season started, I think, and my head was practically exploding, because not only was she saying, like, my very favorite thing about the X-Files, they're in fucking bed together.
Yeah.
So, like, what is going to happen in that episode? I was like, it's everything I love about the X-Files happening all at once. So I just love that moment.
Well, and I think a lot of people get mad at that too, because it's like suddenly they think they're not talking about their relationship anymore because now we're talking about Trump, which they are. Mm. But they are talking about their relationship because it's, again, she's trying to tell him, it's you and me, you know, like, this is where we're at. Like, whatever's going on around us, you and I are the only two people. Like, it's her telling him that without saying it, like they do.
It's the two people. That's the key part.
Two people. Yep.
Yeah. It's like them together, not either of them, but both of them together. And that's the magic of the X-Files, it's Mulder and Scully together, and the world definitely needs to be saved on a regular basis on the X-Files, and they're the people to do it.
Yep. Okay, well, let's get into the sex, because that's what we're all here for. But I just wanted to bring up, too, I think that this is, of the two times that we have seen, or I should say, quote-unquote, implied sex, would be this and All Things. And this is one of those things that people were really upset, I remember, after this aired, and like Chris Carter was making comments about, well, you know, sometimes this is what people do when they're, you know, having issues and they turn to each other in comfort. And I think people freaked out about that because they were like, oh, Chris Carter saying stupid shit again. Surprise, surprise. But I feel like that was just his really bad way of saying, hey, you know, hold your horses. Like, they're not back together yet. Like, that's kind of what I read that as. And to me, it felt kind of perfectly in character for them to be sleeping together and not, really quite there yet. Because I feel like that's exactly what happened the first time. Like, that's kind of my headcanon, is that they were probably sleeping together without really having solidified what was going on between them, which explains all their weird behavior after he comes back from the dead. That's my headcanon. So I kind of like that history is repeating itself a little bit here. But, you know, they work through it just like they did before. And I like that. So, you know, I don't know. I just wanted to point that out. I like the kind of, it's an interesting book ending of all things in this. And I also pointed this out before, but I have to point it out again. The idea that in all things, you see her leaving him in bed. And then in this one, you see her in bed saying, come back to bed. It was just it was just a really nice sort of, probably unintentional because we never give anyone credit for anything on this show, but such a great, wonderful little bookend to those two sex scenes, really quote unquote sex scenes. Yeah, I love it.
Like such a change.
Yeah.
And such a change for the better. So yeah, I totally, I agree with all of that. That sometimes maybe the sex precedes the sort of healthy relationship development, but Mulder and Scully have always been about body language. And so this
they've always
just
been about doing things backwards.
they've always done things backwards. So why not? And it's certainly not unheard of for people to have sex at a not totally appropriate point in their relationship. So it seems pretty real to me. And yeah, I think Chris Carter didn't explain it well at all. But, you know, let's all remember the number one rule for me, which is don't listen to anything Chris Carter actually says, because it will ruin everything for you. Just pay attention to what we are given, and what we're given here is fabulous. So,
yeah, totally.
I was totally good with that. I did want to say about the sex scene, I wrote down, thank God for Scully's bare shoulder, or we'd be arguing the point forever. It would be just like Never Again all over again with, did they have sex or did they not? If all we ever really saw was like, okay, they wake up and they're on different sides of the bed. And so did they, and like, what
that would have been enough for me.
Afterglow, exactly. It would have been probably enough for me, but there still might have been room for argument, possibly. So I'm glad that at least this time they weren't screwing around.
No.
It was pretty obvious what went on. They're not going to, you know, show us a lot, but you know, there's no ambiguity about what happened here. No. I wrote down, finally, we are all team banging, because we can all agree that it really happened this time. Unlike Never Again, we had team banging and team no banging.
Yeah. To be fair, nobody would say that there was no sex that happened in All Things either, even though it was implied.
Yeah, I think that one was pretty definite. I think so. But I mean, I say that, and there'll be someone out there that says, "Well, no, we don't know for sure."
This is what.
This one for sure.
This is what irritates me, and you might not agree with me. This, but I think that sex is much more heavily implied in Never Again than it even is in All Things. And I'm gonna have people coming after me with torches, but it's the truth, folks. Like, if you had Mulder and Scully in that scene, there would have been no debate. If it would have been Mulder in that apartment and not Ed Gerst, there would have been no debate. No debate at all.
Listen to the appropriate episode of where we discuss Never Again, where I will outline exactly why I'm team no banging. I'm not going to get into it again. But yeah, no, I'm still on team no banging there. I mean, I don't want to be. I would be happy for them to have banged, but I still think there's not enough, enough.
No, you're going to say the only reason is because she wakes up alone in the bed, and I'm saying that's no reason.
That's a big part
of
it.
That's not a big reason.
He's on the couch, and we don't see him naked at any point.
Because
no
he's
one's
left.
Naked.
He's okay. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I know I understand he can get dressed and leave, obviously. He wasn't going to go pick up the bagels or whatever he got naked. That would have been striking if he had, but
She's wearing his shirt.
She is.
Sex was had. We're getting off topic.
If they showed him, if he was lying in bed, apparently unclothed, as Mulder was in All Things, I would be convinced by that. It's just not quite enough, but we won't rehash the whole thing again.
No, we won't. It's okay. I'm just pointing out the want to believe / don't want to believe camps. That's kind of where we're at, but it's implied. It's implied in both.
Okay.
It's more than implied in Plus One. We can agree on that.
Yes. We definitely agree on that. We're all team banging for plus one.
There's plenty of evidence to support it in plus one. You know, it's a shame though we don't get to see it, but you know, I'm never ever expecting that. I've said it before, yeah, and I'll say it again. We got more here than I ever expected, so I will take it.
Yeah, me too, actually. It's more than I expected. I was like, seeing as much of Scully's nakedness as we did, I was like, oh my God, she's actually naked. It was like, that to me, by X-Files standards, is like huge. I was very excited by it.
It's kind of like in all things, Mulder's naked, and in this one, she's naked. And so put them together, and there's sex happening. So we'll take it.
Someone somewhere has edited that together in some fashion. And I would like to see it, please.
Oh, that would be great.
Because they both look very fine.
Yeah.
In both cases.
Heaven forbid they both be together, but you know.
Heaven forbid. But yeah, what I mean, we could ask, like, why is Mulder still wearing his tank top at the end of all that? I don't know. My headcanon is that it all just happened really fast because everything was just very hot. Oh, and he just kind of, you know, in all the excitement, forgot to take it off.
Do you want to hear my headcanon?
I do.
It was off completely, and then the manager knocked at the door because of all the noise they were making, and he had to put his clothes on to go answer the door. That's my headcanon.
That's good. I like that one, too.
Solved. Problem solved.
It's good either way. I mean, I'm happy to see Mulder wearing that tank top at any opportunity, so I was fine with it. And we got to see him, you know, he took it off briefly when he was getting changed a few minutes later, so that was great.
Right. And we have to we were asked this on Twitter, folks, so we have to talk about the moment where Mulder goes into the bathroom.
Let's talk about it.
And rinses his mouth out. Okay, we all know where we're going. The consensus that I see is that there's only one reason for Mulder to be going into the bathroom and rinsing his mouth out. And I have to tell you a story about this because over dinner tonight, I had a conversation with my husband about this. We were talking, and he's very used to my ridiculous X-Files debates, and this probably is at the top of the list in one of those debates, but I was just kind of explaining to him the scene, and I was like, as a dude, you know, what do you think? We literally talked about this. Jen, I'm not lying. We talked about this for probably about 10 minutes. He was asking me about all of the things that were leading up to the scene, what was happening and all this stuff. He's like, okay, well, how long had they been sleeping? What was going on? And we had this whole conversation. And then I was trying to tell him all this. And seriously, at the end of this, he goes, why are we even talking about this? Of course he ate her out. That's exactly what he said. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. And he's like, done.
All right. It's official.
Yes.
It's official.
I was like, and then after a while I was like, why are we debating this? And I'm like, you don't understand. The reason that people are talking about this is because we are so thirsty that this is such a big deal that they put this in the episode. The idea that we can roll this into their repertoire like the handcuffs is just mind blowing. You know what I mean? And so he's like, I get it. He doesn't really get it, but I think he's trying to humor me.
he's trying, bless him.
Yes. But you know, bless you, Duchovny, for going into that bathroom and rinsing your mouth out. Whether it was intentional or not, you have set aflame the fandom.
Totally. I will just say rinsing his mouth out and wiping his mouth afterwards.
Yeah.
For me, it's the wiping his mouth afterwards that seals the deal for me.
You're right.
Totally.
Yeah.
And and because, you know, we don't get the sex scene, we have to really just kind of like take everything we can get and piece it all together like a very important puzzle, which it is. Mm. We want to know what's in the repertoire. So it's very important to determine these things, and good fun too.
I mean, to my husband's point, which he was sort of trying to point out, is that this is sort of one of those things that comes standard. It's not like a crazy thing to think that this is happening. And I'm like, I understand. This is exactly what happens. But it was just the idea that they would put something in the episode like that. I'm trying to kind of clarify that. I'm like, it's not the fact that it happened. We know that it happened. It's just the fact that they put this in the episode. That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
That's a gift. I'm going to take that. Yeah. I'm going to take that as a gift to those of us that want to know the details. Thank you. Thank you to whoever put that in there, because we're going to take everything we can get. We need to know all of the details.
All the details.
And there's a lot to go with there, in my opinion. That's not there for no reason. That's there for a reason. And I'm happy for that to be it.
And I love the idea I mean, yeah, seeing the sex would have been great. But I love the idea that we get to see Mulder and Scully arguing over a case post-coitally. Like,
I love it. I love that.
They did that. We got that. That was amazing. Like, and you know,
love it.
Her attitude, too, is just so like, it's fine. Come back to bed. Come back to bed. And he's like totally panicking. And I just loved it. It was so perfect. It was so perfect.
She is so, she cannot put a dimmer on that afterglow.
No.
Because it is burning bright. And like, girl, I totally get you. I would too in that situation.
And so, we all know why that afterglow is.
We do know exactly why. And I do. I love it. And like, to me, it just seems like when I imagine like what they would be in that scenario, it's exactly what I would want them to be like, you know, arguing about a case, still being Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
But, you know, having this sort of, you know, lovely post-sex glow about them at the same time. And yeah, I love all of that. For some reason, I really love the line when Mulder says, how many letters in Scully, Scully?
Yes.
I don't know why I love that line so much, but I do. I love it. Something about the way Duchovny delivers it or something, but I love that whole scene. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the sex is good fun, but the part from where Mulder sees his doppelganger to the end of that scene, that it's the energy is just really high and it's just really sharply written and just, yeah, so very Mulder and Scully, and I love it.
Yeah. And I do love, too, that it's like, even in these moments, he's like, I know you can take care of yourself. I'm going to go take care of myself. We can handle this. You know what I mean? Like, I like it, too. He's just, I like panicky Mulder. It's very cute.
He is very cute.
Very
cute. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and Scully is like, she's calm. She's got her shit together. She's not freaking out. She's a little worried, but she's not freaking out.
Very satisfied. It's kind of hard to care.
Of course. She's slightly intoxicated, and I can totally understand that.
Yeah, yeah. I have to ask an actual plot question. How do you think, because I mean, there's probably a lot of different interpretations of how the doppelgangers went away in terms of both Scully and Mulder. I mean, it's pretty clear that when Mulder's fighting his doppelganger, his goes away because they are now fighting. The twins are now fighting against each other.
Right.
And so their focus is now off Mulder and Scully. And so the doppelgangers disappear. You can look at Scully's and interpret it many different ways. Like, she's talked her out of it. She took those weird pills. Like, I don't know. There's a million different things. But, I mean, in the end of the day, we don't really know the timing of her being in the car. So her doppelganger could have just disappeared at the same time as Mulder's did, right?
I was asking myself that exact same question today because I had never really thought about it until I watched the episode last night, and then I rewatched it today, and I thought, I really want to pay attention this time to see what the timing is, because I was trying to figure that out myself, like exactly what conclusions are we meant to draw. And the way it's edited, it looks like Scully's doppelganger disappears before there's any conflict between the twins.
Right.
Now, of course, that may not have been how it actually played out in real time.
Right.
But the way it looks as though she, either from the pill or from, you know, her kind of, you know, clear rational thinking of sort of, you know, talking herself out of it, which I think is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the placebo effect from the pill, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's the way I take that, is that she, I like to think, you know, I love it when Scully's badass. And so I like to think she kind of like, she thought her way out of that, which also kind of appeals to me on a personal level, because that's a part of dealing with anxiety, which is, I've mentioned before, something that I deal with. A lot of that sometimes is you just got to talk yourself out of it, and when you can. And the idea that you can kind of change your brain in such a way as to make that thing of which you are afraid go away is a great metaphor for sort of any kind of therapy for anxiety. So I love that idea, and so that's kind of the way I interpret that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mulder's doppelganger seems to disappear roughly around the time, I think maybe when, it might even take, you know, both of the twins being killed before his totally disappears. I'm not sure, but certainly it's after they start to turn on each other, like you say. So he's like, you know, it's so Mulder. It's like, you know, he's ready to fight his doppelganger. You know, Scully's like being, you know, super rational. And Mulder's like, fighting time, let's go. That's a great scene though, right? I mean, so, you know, obviously they had to shoot it with great care to make it look as though Mulder's fighting himself,
mm-hmm.
With the editing and such, but they did a great job with it. It's great.
I think to your point of how you interpret it, I think that they leave it, you know, ambiguous so that you can kind of pick and choose which way to interpret it. But I think the timing actually works. It makes sense that she would be 5-10 minutes behind him because he's out the door and she's still in bed naked. So it makes sense to me that, like, she is behind him because she's obviously still in the car. And when she arrives at Judy's cell or whatever you call it, she's already dead. So, I mean, I feel like it's perfectly possible the timing could be the same.
That's possible.
But I think it's like I said, I think it's meant to be they throw in all these red herrings or they throw in all these other things so that you can kind of decide what the truth is, which I like.
Absolutely.
I always
very
like
X-Files
when they do that. Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. I was wondering the same thing myself. So I'm glad we got a chance to hash that out.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about that last scene. And then after we talk about the last scene, I think we're gonna rank our season 11 episodes because I don't think we've done that yet, right?
It's time. It's time.
I know you and I just love to rank things. It just makes me happy.
We love to rank things.
I mean, we've talked about this ending so much. I still think it's the best ending ever. I think it's the best ending ever got.
Yeah, I wrote down actually in my notes best final shot of the season/series. I mean, there's a case to be made that it's the best final shot of any episode of the X-Files.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's so cute. I you know what's funny? When I first watched this scene, it liked the bed scene. Like, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way because I was so sure that she was, like, shutting him down. Even though when I watch it again, I can tell that that's not what's happening at all. Like, I think, like, you could tell with her eyes that, like, that's not what's happening at all. But when you're watching it the first time, you're like, Scully, come on, look at him.
Yeah.
He's got his buttons down and everything. He's all ready to go. And then when she kind of changes her mind, I was just like, oh, we know that was going to happen. But it was just so perfect. And she even, like, bites her lip. Like, oh, that's totally a thing that Jillian did. And I
totally.
Thank you for it, Jillian.
Yeah, and we knew she was going to change her mind, and clearly Mulder knew she was going to change her mind before she even knew, because he is ready for her when she opens up that door.
I think she knew, too, though, is what I'm saying. Like, the way she was looking at him while she was talking was just, like I said, it's obscene. It's, like, it's not even subtle. I'm just, like, you are undressing him. She's, like, looking down. She's looking him up and down. It's not even, it's obscene. Seriously, watch it again.
I know. It's definitely there. I know I kind of go back and forth a bit on that because sometimes, I think, like, it's clear which way this is going.
Her words say one thing, her
but
eyes
sometimes
say
I
another.
Feel like she genuinely seems to hesitate after Mulder leaves the room. But I don't think there was ever much question in her mind about how that was going to end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Maybe consciously she thought nothing was going to happen, but unconsciously, oh, yes, it was happening. That's my interpretation of that, but I love it. It's great. And from what I understand, that was Duchovny's idea for him to be standing at the door when she opened it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I actually think it was initially it was supposed to be like she was gonna watch him, see him changing or something, and then
something he was gonna answer the door or something like that.
Yeah, but he was like, it needs to be like, he was kind of making the point that it needs to be her kind of being the aggressor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love it. I love that. I love that she just owns it. And the look on his face when she opens up that door is so great. It's like sexy, but sort of sweet and sort of loving at the same time and kind of snarky, too. It's like perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Love it. And then like the sword sound as the credits roll. And it's like, oh, my God. Just when you thought it couldn't get any crazier. There we go.
Yeah, that was just going to mention that the little unsheathing noise at the end. It was just I actually didn't notice that the first time. The unsheathing.
Yeah, I think I missed it the first time too.
Because I think I was too busy screaming. Probably was too busy screaming. And then I think I actually night watched the ending at least 4 or 5 times. And I probably didn't even notice the unsheathing until like maybe the 3rd or 4th time. And I was like, oh my God, they went there. They did that. Like, who decided to do that? It could not have been Mr. Carter. I mean,
I can't believe that it was. I do know from what I have read that the sort of the first reviewer's cut, I don't know all the correct terminology, but I know I read a reviewer who had seen an earlier version of this episode, and it did not have the sword sound in it. So when that person saw it again on television, they were like, holy shit, there's a sword sound. They didn't have that the first time. So it was obviously added fairly late in post-production, I presume.
Oh, my God. I would die to know whose decision that was.
Love it. I mean, obviously, nothing happens in the end without Carter approving it, but right. I'd love to know whose idea it was, because right. it's perfect. It really is perfect. And I mean, like, obviously, swords are part of the plot. They had the sound already, obviously, for the episode, because we hear it during the scene where Dean, the lawyer, is trying to get rid of all the swords. We hear that actual sort of right. unsheathing sound. So the idea that's like, hey, we've got this sword sound. Let's just throw it in there. For shits and giggles, and the fact that they left it in there is amazing. I love it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Best thing ever.
It is the best thing ever. Let's all enjoy it. And yeah, I think that everyone probably missed it the first time around because everyone was screaming far too loud.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of when the season 9 finale aired and they kissed in The Truth. And like, I don't remember anything of that entire scene because it was a room full of girls just screaming. Like, we were like, because he's holding, yeah. you know, he's holding her hand the whole time. And we're just sitting there going, oh, my God, he's holding her hand. Like, I don't even know all this stuff they're talking about. Don't care. Who cares? Look at it. Look at that. Like,
no
I,
one cares.
Yeah. I just remember.
Yeah, it does not matter.
Thing.
It's like, you know, the plot doesn't matter. It's just like, yeah, they're talking about important stuff, I think, right now. But nobody cares because look at how they're looking at each other and look at what they're doing.
They have that power. To make us
they
not care.
Have always had that power over me and over each other.
All right,
can
Jen.
I say? Can I make a little confession though about the?
Please.
And then they had sex a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I am as happy as the next person that Mulder and Scully had sex, assuming that we're all very happy about that and thrilled about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get quite as thrilled about it as I think some people do, just because. I was kind of left feeling like that this was going to be like a change in their relationship. And I felt kind of like I always felt sort of looking back on it, that it was unfortunate that it did not lead to more in the season. Because this was, again, episode 3. And at the time I was like super stoked. It's like, okay, this is what's happening in episode 3. What is yet to come? And it turns out there wasn't anything really yet to come. And sometimes it makes me sad when I think about that. That's kind of all we got. I mean, I get, you know, it's the X-Files. But I really would have liked to, if I had to swap the implied sex in Plus One for the chance for an on-screen kiss, I probably would make that swap, which I know probably is controversial. Let's talk about, you know, like the kiss in The Truth, for example, that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
If I could have one or the other, I would pick the kiss in The Truth over the implied sex. That is my personal opinion.
Okay, that's true, but we've already gotten what is it, 6 kisses? We've already gotten the 6
yeah.
kisses. Like, we hadn't gotten the scene like this before. Like, we've never gotten a scene like this before. So I disagree. I think if we hadn't gotten kisses already, sure, of course, I'd rather have a kiss. But we've had kisses. Like, I mean, and again, if I have to choose, yeah, I would love to have both. Yeah. If I have to choose, I'm happy with what we had. I still am a little salty that they didn't kiss before, because I think it would have been so easy for them to like lean in
Jesus.
And kiss.
I mean, would it have been that hard? It's like you'd have to go to your way not to have them kiss at that point.
And they did.
It just
and it's
no
just
sense.
Cruel. Yeah, it's terrible. That's cruel and terrible. But I mean, you know.
I'm pretty salty about that.
We are used to this with our expectations. And I mean, even without the kiss, like, my expectations were exceeded in this episode. And yeah, you're right. I would agree with you. I mean, in retrospect, I think that the idea that the sex could happen and then they could just kind of go back to doing their normal thing and being their normal selves is fine with me, because that's the way the show's always been. Like, I feel like that's just kind of the way they, even after we knew that it had happened in all things, like, it's not like things really changed. I mean, I feel like everything kind of felt the same. It, you know, you could feel it slowly.
You could feel it slowly
progressing, but like, it was so slow and so subtle that there wasn't like a suddenly an overnight, like there wasn't like an overnight change. Like, there wasn't. So
that's true. Except I guess because from my point of view, it's like, well, they were there, they were together, they were a domestic partnership, and having been there once, it struck me that it shouldn't have been that hard to get back there again after something like this. And I can see, you know, there's certainly a case to be made that that it wouldn't happen automatically by any means, but I just remember being kind of disappointed for the rest of the season that it was taking so long to get there, because it's like, okay, they've had, because, you know, I'm probably thinking in terms of more traditional TV schedules in terms of relationships, which is as soon as your couple have sex, everything is fine. They're an official couple now.
Yeah.
And of course, it's the X-Files and it's not traditional television. So we just assume that.
I would kind of disagree that they didn't progress, because I think they did in their usual way. Like in the next episode, I mean, they're talking about going out on a date, you know, like they're doing their thing. That's true. Like they're starting over, like they're kind of working through it in their kind of own cute little way. And so it's like, I see a progression. Like the only time I remember it really kind of frustrating people is like the episodes like Kitten. I think like Familiar was the other one where like there was nothing shippy at all, where we were just like, what's going on? Yeah. Where you're like, just what's going on here? But I mean, again, that sort of shit happened in the old show too. Like, or in the old, it's just, I mean, it's just more frustrating because we're in the now and everything's kind of different and there's only 10 episodes. So, I mean, I kind of get that frustration, but I mean, I saw the progression. The only thing I think that people were really kind of irritated by was in RM9, when it's pretty clear that they're not living together. Everybody's kind of assuming that they were back living together again, and I was just like, well, maybe they're not there yet, hey folks, you know what I mean? Like, there were just some things that were like, it was kind of frustrating, because again, it's the same thing we talked about, like with the breakup. Like, if you're going to do the breakup, fine, but you have to address it. Like, you have to talk about it. You have to make it sort of part of the story instead of just kind of the background noise. And I feel like we've been putting up with this same stuff for the entire run of the show. So it's frustrating, yes. But to me, is it beyond the pale? Is it out of the norm? No. So that's kind of my
sadly,
take on it.
Sadly right. not. I think that my heart just leapt when we finally had implied sex. And you're right, it's a pretty historic event. Yeah. And I thought, you know, all bets are off. Anything can happen on the X-Files now. And then it kind of went back to the way the X-Files has always been, which is like, I mean, I'm never going to complain about that. I just had a little secret fantasy of seeing Mulder and Scully living in the unremarkable house again after we saw it. And I want to believe, I just always wanted to see it again. It's just a little secret wish of mine. And I was sad that we never got a chance to really see it again. But, you know, absolutely, it's totally reasonable that they didn't. But, you know, I always have my wishes.
It's the order of the episodes, too. It's like, if I had my way, I would have reordered these episodes. Like, I would love to sit down and be like, this is the order I would have put these episodes in to make sense in terms of the progression of the relationship. Because it's like, even in Lost Out of Forehead Sweat, like, they're behaving like they're back together. Like, in my opinion, they're behaving like they're back together. Like, she's in the house. You know, if you would have told me that she was living with him again, I would have believed you. So I think maybe that's why people were kind of upset. Like, it's the same thing like with this, like you're watching this.
Yes.
And you feel like this is all, cool. They're back together. We didn't see it, but it's like they're back together. And then suddenly we're in plus one when he's like, well, we got to share a room. And she's like, mm-mm. And we're like, what? Yeah. Wait, what is happening? What? Like, and so again, it's the order, but I think, God, I they do that to fuck with us. Like, I mean, it's so frustrating and it's so annoying, but it doesn't. I don't know. I always am just like, well, that's the X-Files, you know?
Yeah, it really is. Mulder and Scully are not ones to follow a natural progression.
No.
And so, we have to accept it to a certain extent. But you'd think after like 200 plus episodes, I'd be used to it. But yet, they still know exactly how to yank my chain. And it works every time. And obviously, did not affect my love for Mulder and Scully in the show in any way, shape, or form. So
right.
It's the way it is. I probably would have been totally confused if things had gone in any kind of a natural, normal, expected traditional progression. So it's probably for the best. I would have been very confused otherwise.
Yeah. Okay, I think there's one more thing we should probably talk about, because we were asked on Twitter our opinions on this. So I'm having trouble remembering how I felt at the time, but did you see the whole pregnancy thing coming, like when you watched this? Like,
no, I didn't.
Yeah, me neither. Okay.
I think a lot of people did, but I'm one of those ones that was like, oh, later on. I started to read theories about it during the season. I wasn't really heavily involved in X-Files Twitter at that point. I wasn't really much on X-Files Twitter at all at that stage. And so I didn't hear a lot of fandom reaction to that episode.
Right.
At some point in the season, I remember hearing the theory going around, especially with regard, I think for me, what kind of convinced me was the fact that the motel is called St. Rachel's. And like Rachel is this sort of figure in the Old Testament who has, two children, I think, very late in life. Interestingly enough, dies in childbirth. We'll skip that part of the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then, like, of course, they're talking about having kids. And I was like, oh, of course, that's exactly what's happened. So I could see it after yeah. other people smarter than I was yeah. Could figure it out. Once I heard it, actually, it kind of lessened it a little bit for me, because I'm like, oh, so we weren't allowed to have Mulder and Scully having sex for fun. Now it had to be like a plot point that always has to bloody lead to pregnancy.
No.
Thanks for nothing.
But they got to have sex twice. That's what I always tell people.
That's true.
It the was first time was for the baby. Necessary. The second time was yeah. just for them. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's, fair enough. But you didn't catch the pregnancy right off the bat either, then.
No. And I felt like an idiot, man. Like, I seriously did, because people were talking about it. Because I, you know, again, I'm one of those people that, like, I, you know, I think she's in her 50s and she's also, you know, quote unquote infertile, even though I don't believe she is. She can't. Of course, she can't have a baby. I didn't. Never even occurred to me that was even a thing that was going to happen. And then when people were talking about it, I was like, oh, maybe. Maybe. Yeah. And I'm also one of those people that it doesn't bother me that she got pregnant. So, again, I also don't have, like, super strong feelings about it. But, like, yeah. But yeah, it is annoying to think that they had sex and then, like, we have to see the sex because it has to lead to pregnancy, because that's the same reason. I mean, they've said again and again, it's the same reason that they showed it in All Things, because they wanted us to have another, you know, another avenue for the baby to have yeah. happened. So it's kind of frustrating that they yeah. do that when that is necessary. That's why I love the twice.
Yeah,
because they get to do it twice. Come on, guys. Let's relax.
Yeah, that's right. You know, for plot purposes, really, they'd only need the once. So
right.
Yeah, right. The twice was one more than absolutely necessary, and we should be grateful for that.
Yeah, and I mean, we know it happened multiple times after that as well. So, you know, let's live with
that.
But yeah, sure. Later, when we were confirmed that it was pregnant, I obviously after the show was over, when I looked back and I saw the title, I was like, I really should have probably seen that coming, because plus one, that makes sense.
Yeah, truly. Like, there's now, looking back on it, there were so many hints that I was like, boy, I'm bad at this.
Yeah.
But I think I was just sort of swept up in just sort of what was happening at the time. And
right.
It didn't, I'm notoriously bad for predicting the outcome of any kind of show. So it's not surprising that I missed this. I just tend not to, I think I'm like, I actively try not to think ahead, because I don't want to, like, spoil myself accidentally.
Right.
I really like being surprised. And so I tend not to try to predict things. But yeah, no, I was kind of a dunce on this one, I think, because I totally missed it. But it made total sense once people started talking about it. I was like, oh, that is definitely true. I'm totally certain now that she's going to be pregnant. I didn't really want her to be, but that's just me. But yeah, no, missed it completely at the time, though.
Yeah, same. Well, we can both put on the dunce
right,
cap.
I feel better now. At least yeah. I wasn't the only one.
Yeah, no. I appreciate your honesty. Anyway, okay. Well, let's hear your rank. I want to hear your ranking. Do you want to just, let's quickly go down.
I will real quick. Do you want me to do my 1 to 10?
Yeah, 10 to like 1? How about let's each do our 10s and then let's each do our 9s and let's do it that way.
Okay, shall we start with 10? No probably surprise for anyone that's, well, this is no surprise for anyone probably, and for anyone that's heard my opinion about this. Number 10, My Struggle 3, a very distant 10. If I could put it at 20, I would.
Mine's not 10. That
bloody hell.
I might get hate for this, but I put Familiar at 10.
Ah,
but I have,
you know,
to tell,
I'm not,
you,
argue with you.
I'm, I have to tell you,
I don't like that episode.
I liked, I didn't not like really any of the episodes in season 11, so I can't, but I just put it there because there was zero shippy anything. I thought it was a pretty good episode, but there were some problematic things about it. Anyway, we're not talking about that. What's your 9?
9, My Struggle 4.
My 9's Kitten.
Fair enough.
Okay, what's your 8?
Yeah, fair enough. My 8 is Familiar, and in my mind, Familiar and My Struggle 4 are pretty close together in terms of, I'm not crazy about either of them for very different reasons.
Yeah.
Familiar beats My Struggle 4 only for Mr. Chuckle Teeth.
Yeah,
he puts Familiar one notch ahead for that reason.
My 8's My Struggle 3. I hate it as much as you do, but I can't put it at the worst because it's got some great shippy stuff in it. I can't do it. Sorry.
Yeah, true. Yeah, fair enough.
What's yours? What are we, 7? Yeah.
7. Yeah. 7 for me is RM9. I don't dislike that episode, but it just has never grabbed me the way it's grabbed other people.
Okay. My 7's My Struggle 4.
Fair enough. That's the highest it's going to be on a lot of people's lists, I suspect.
I agree.
Yeah, fair enough.
I just think there's a lot of good stuff about it. I think there's some bad stuff about it, but I do think that there's some good stuff about it, and I will leave it there.
Yep.
What's your number six?
My number six is Kitten.
Okay, you're going to hate me. Sorry. My number six is Nothing Lasts Forever. I love the last scene, but I'm not crazy about the rest of the episode, so.
That's okay. You're in numerous company in that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great, but I just am not crazy about it like you. Okay. Number five?
Plus one, the episode of the hour. I think it's a good episode, obviously. I just don't love it as much as I love four other episodes in the season. It says a lot about how strong season 11 was, that what to me is a strong episode, plus one, still only made it to number five. So I still have a lot of good things to say about it, obviously.
All of my top five could be interchangeable, I'm just saying right now. But I did put an order. RM9 is probably my number five.
Yeah, I get you. My 5, 6, 7, which were plus one, Kitten, and RM9, those were all very interchangeable. I think they're all solid, good episodes.
Wait, you could interchange plus one with Kitten?
Yes. In terms of how much I genuinely like the episode, yes. I'll stand by that.
I think that's the craziest thing I've ever heard you say on this podcast.
I just really like Skinner. And no Skinner in this. Skinner and Kitten. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I'm standing by it.
Okay. All right. What's your number four?
Ghoulie. That's a strong episode. Any of my top four are all, like, to me, they're all, like, almost perfection. So
yeah, same. My four is Lost Art of Fourth Sweat.
Yep. My number three, Nothing Lasts Forever. We know how much I love that episode. Mm-hmm. I understand not everyone does, but nothing will stop me from loving it.
Yep. My three is Ghoulie.
Good. My number two, Lost Art of Forehead Sweat. It's a great, great episode.
Yeah, my number two is plus one, and we both have the same number one, which is this.
I think we must. There's only one episode left. This.
I don't think we're going to have a lot of disagreement on that. I think if I asked 10 people, or if I asked 100 people what their favorite episode, I think 9 times out of 10 they're going to say this. I would put money on that.
That's not a super controversial episode. Like an episode like Lost Art or Forehead Sweat, I know there's people out there that don't like it at all.
Yeah.
But this, I don't think, I haven't encountered anyone that dislikes the episode. You may not love it as much as we do. You may not put it at your number one, but it's just, there's not a lot to dislike about that episode. It's just a very good, well-executed episode.
Yeah, totally. Well, that was cool. I liked doing that little ranking. That was fun. I'm a little offended that you would put plus one anywhere near Kitten, but you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah, that's what happened. It's just the way it went. I can't explain it. It's just, you know, it's always with me in the X-Files. It's always about emotions. And I don't know why I'm attached to Kitten, but I am.
It's okay. I think people are probably offended that I have MS4 at 7, so it's okay. I'm well.
I'm pretty sure we've offended numerous people with all kinds of our opinions on this, especially when you're spelling something out a ranking like this, you're really just putting yourself out there for critiques, because people will never, well, I mean, you and I don't agree on our top 10 by any means. Yeah. And we agree on a lot. So there's a lot of people, I'm sure, that would disagree with every single, there's probably someone out there, and I really want to know who it is, who has the exact opposite to my ranking.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see someone that has My Struggle 3 in number one. I'd love to hear why you put it there. So
I don't think it's great.
We all have different opinions.
I don't think that anyone, I don't think one person on this earth would make this their worst episode of the season.
I'd love to hear someone that does.
I'm going to say that with certainty.
Anyone that doesn't even have it in their top four, I'd like to hear from, because I don't know how you don't have it in your top four. So even if you're not a shipper, there's still lots of non-shippy stuff to love about that episode. So
yeah, that was a great
episode. It would puzzle me, but hey, we all have our own take on things. So let's hear all of those opinions. But yeah, love doing this season rankings.
Yeah, lots of things puzzle me. About lots of things. anyway, we've gone on quite a bit about this episode. I actually was worried we were going to not have anything to talk about because we've talked about it so much. But I think we are all talked out on plus one. Would you agree?
For now, we'll see. I don't know. I will never say never.
I'm sure it will come up again.
All I can say for sure is that for today, for this episode of X-Files Diaries, we are done talking about Plus One.
Thanks, you guys, for listening. Let us know. I want to hear everybody's rankings of season 11. I think that would be super fun.
Yeah,
so if you have a season 11 ranking, tweet at us at XFD Podcast. And also let us know what you think about Plus One. I mean, you guys wanted to hear it, so we want to hear from you guys. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we will be back with you in a couple weeks with another episode of X-Files Diaries. Bye.
Bye.